welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we, of course, explore UFOs and the paranormal. I've got some exciting news. It's actually been 1 year since this program has been on the air, so I'm very excited to announce our 1 year anniversary. So that's good news. Yay! And our guest tonight, I'm really excited about the show tonight. This is a unique subject you probably haven't heard a lot about. Our guest tonight is Stan Hughes, and we're going to be talking about telepathic UFO encounters, Native American UFO encounters, and benevolent UFO encounters, which all kind of wrap up into one subject. This is not a show about abductions by gray-type ETs. I'm telling you, there's a completely different aspect to UFOs, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Before I get to my guest, let me, of course, tell you what's going on in the UFO and paranormal world. And, of course, there is a lot of stuff going on. Now, Katarina Wilson, she is a famous UFO experiencer. She wrote a book called Alien Jigsaw, and she has just released a new online book, an e-book, which is called I Forgot What I Wasn't Supposed to Remember, An Expanded View of the Alien Abduction Phenomenon. And what's really nice is she's actually offering this online for free. You just go to her website, www.alienjigsaw.com, and you can download it on Adobe. So it's very exciting. She's one of the pioneers of UFO research. So you might want to take a look into that. And we got some other stuff going on. Let me see. We have a meteor shower, which is taking place on August 12th. So if you're into that sort of thing, mark that down on your calendar, and if you see any strange lights on August 12th, make sure it's not a meteor before you call the UFO people. Okay, what else do we got going on? There's a lot of people, again, taking photographs of UFOs. I'm telling you, the proof of UFOs is really already here, but it's going to be exploding at some point because there just seems like there's so much activity going on. We have a sighting here which took place, let me see, July 26th in Costa Rica. Amateur video was taken by, Angel Brenes, who works at the Tres Rios Electric Substation in Costa Rica. He took a two-minute-long cell phone video of this unidentified flying object flying among the electric towers. So that's pretty interesting. We're seeing a lot more of that kind of stuff. There's another really interesting sighting which took place apparently in Yucatan in Mexico. And the gentleman, his name is Alberto Perez Valencia. He's the main witness. And he actually took, again, some cell phone camera video of this object. According to his report, he was sleeping in his room when he heard strange metallic noises, which caused him to get out of bed, and he went and took a look, and looking out the window, he saw a large object 150 feet off the ground. He said it was as big as a truck, and he quickly grabbed his cell phone and started taking video footage. And so here again, we have a lot of proof going on. Let me see, there's some cattle mutilations on the rise in, of all places, Argentina. Apparently a cattleman has found a number of his cows mutilated with, quote, perfect incisions. And there have been a number of other cases in the area. So there is all sorts of stuff going on. According to the monthly statistical MUFON report for July 2007, which has just come out, UFOs are still here. No surprise. United States leads the world, according to MUFON at least, in the number of reports, with 150 reports coming in just for the month of July. And let me see, Egypt is the second largest country in terms of reports with 15. That's kind of surprising. England is next with 15, Canada with 7, Indonesia and Afghanistan each have 2 reports, and a bunch of other countries report 1. And in the United States, California, no surprise, leads the pack with 17 reports, Michigan with 12, and Illinois with 9. And how many reports do we have of landings? 9 landings, hoverings, takeoffs, and 12 cases of entities reported. So this stuff is going on every day, guys. The UFOs are here, and they're not going away. And what this means for humanity, well, that's what I'm hoping our guest will be able to give us a little bit of clue on. Our guest tonight is Stan Hughes, and he is actually a Native American and has had many really interesting and benevolent telepathic UFO encounters. He currently resides in the northwestern United States, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Stan, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Preston.
I'm really excited. I mean, when I interviewed you, you know, several months back, I mean, your story, I'd heard some of it before, but some of the things you tell me are so unique that it's just really a breath of fresh air in a field, I think, that has so much fear-based stuff going on.
Well, I appreciate having the chance to share some of those. And I come from South Dakota, and so when we greet our friends, we say Hokoda, and a little special greeting to those of our listeners today. We would say Wichada Oyata, which is the believer people. So I'm saying hello to the believer people in the Sioux language.
Oh, cool. Yeah, if anyone wants to call in tonight, if this is a call-in show, our number is 877-876-5227. Let me repeat that. It's 877-876-5227. Toll-free, so give us a call if you have any questions. Okay, Stan, would you say that you've always believed in UFOs? I mean, the star people, I guess you call them, are part of the Native American culture, right?
Yeah, we call them the Woga, and that's the star people. And they've been in Native American stories and mythology way, way back. And so I've been involved with the belief of that as long as I can remember. And as I've grown older and become more of an adult, I seem to be a little more aware of what's going on around me. And it's just reinforcing the things that I believed when I was younger. And it's a family thing, too. So that makes it, we share our experiences with each other. So we don't feel quite alone out there in the world.
Right, you're lucky. You know, it's funny because I would say half the people in my family have seen UFOs. I've got a large family, lots of, you know, five brothers and sisters and all sorts of, you know, extended family. And half have seen UFOs, half haven't. And the ones who haven't seen them are pretty skeptical. And
isn't
sometimes
that the truth? And sometimes people that have seen them are skeptical. They're trying to find all different reasons to not believe.
Right, right.
And that's too bad.
Well, that's what, I mean, you've seen them, I mean, I don't know, probably dozens or more times in what you would call like nocturnal lights. I mean,
that's the big phenomena of our way, and it's a nightly thing. And I have places up in the mountains up near the Canadian border that I like to go, some of the high places, and it's quite a light show all night long. I've seen the daylight discs. I've had a close encounter, so it just keeps reinforcing itself. And I do have a few things I'd like to share with the listeners that I've experienced. And maybe some people will be able to identify with some of those things and say, yeah, that's happened to me too. And that's really what we need is the reinforcement, that ring of family with each other, that we're not all nuts. And this is a true event that's happening, and it seems to me, and maybe you can reinforce this, that it's happening more and more often in wider spread part of the world. And it's interesting to watch like the History Channel and Discovery Channel as they delve into these particular issues and some of the amazing video and stuff that they bring forward. So things are coming together. That's my opinion anyway.
Right. You know, I totally agree. It seems like there's a lot of activity going on, and people are coming forward finally with stories like yours. I mean, one story that you told me, which I thought was really interesting, was when your daughter started saying, oh, it's this UFO, it's talking to me.
That was quite an interesting experience. Let me paint a word picture for you. It was just about this time of year, about 10 years ago, and we were on the north shore of a beautiful lake in the panhandle of Idaho called Pend'Oreille. And we're up on a bluff probably 100 feet above the water, and there's a big pull-off there from the Highway 200. And so were set out there. There was my ex-mother-in-law and ex-father-in-law, my ex-brother-in-law, my children, and myself, just enjoying the night and watching the nocturnal lights. And most amazing thing happened. An extremely bright one came in our direction. We were on the north shore of the lake from the south, and it really was about eye level, and so it was reflecting off the water. And it was a really bright light. And all of a sudden, my little girl said, "Daddy, Daddy, they're talking to me. What should I do?" And I said, and I was so shocked to hear that, all I could say was, "Well, just tell them you love them."
Wow.
Still kind of brings emotion to my mind to think about that little girl voice saying, "I love you." And that nocturnal light flared up so bright, we had to put our hands over our eyes. And then it just cruised over the top of us and went over the mountains behind us. And my ex-mother-in-law, she just said, "My God, they can't hear us. They must be reading our mind."
Right.
So that made the believer out of that branch of my family, believe me. That was pretty spectacular.
Those are the kind of stories I like to hear. I mean, one lady I interviewed, she had a sighting. Her name is Debbie. When she was like 5 years old, she saw this UFO. Or she actually woke up at around 6 o'clock a.m. and saw this UFO hovering outside the window. And she got really excited, and she was just seized by this feeling of intense longing and started crying and said, "You know, take me with you. I don't belong here. Take me home." And it responded in some way that she can't remember. But later on, when she was a teenager, at age 17, this UFO came back, and she recognized it as the same UFO, and she looked up, and she again introduced herself and just sent a thought to them saying her name, saying, "I know who you are, and I wish you peace and love, and I mean you no harm." And immediately after that, they responded with a thought that said, "Sister, we know of you. We have been watching you. We wish you peace and joy. We mean you no harm. And we will see you again."
Wow.
So,
you know, Preston, you know, I've emailed you and talked to you about some experiences like that I've had. And it's comforting to know that others are in that venue also. And I thought it was strange, you know, I talked to you about when that one dropped right in the middle of the road in front of me. I don't know, do you think your listeners would be interested in hearing that story?
Oh, are you kidding? That? I think so. That one is just fascinating to me.
Well, let me try to establish the setting here. Again, it was about this time of year, and I was way up in the wilds of the panhandle of Idaho in a beautiful, pristine lake called Priest Lake. And I had a dog, an old mixed black lab, and he and I used to like to go up on Thunder Mountain, which was the high mountain where we would go to watch UFOs. And we'd spend the night up there. And my lady friend was at Priest Lake staying with some friends. And the plan was that I would drive over and pick up later on that next thing. And there's a really rough road across the mountain hump. We're driving across that. And then the closer to the lake you get, the better the road is. But picture, if you will, most beautiful forested area, even with some old growth cedars and a little brook flowing along beside the road, and absolutely nobody around, and just the fragrances as you're driving along are just hypnotic. And as I told you, I just had this feeling that I needed to pull over the side of the road, which I did. And then and I've never heard of anything like this before. All I can describe it is it was a big silver ball. And it just kind of came from behind and kind of floated in front of me and dropped down in front a little ways. And I was just transfixed by seeing this thing because, you know, you've seen pictures of the daylight discs and all the sci-fi movies. And I don't remember seeing anything that looked like this before. And an opening occurred along the side, and I can't even tell you if it was a door or not. It just was an opening. And then that man stepped out.
Wow.
And this is hard to say because when I think about it, it really brings up a lot of emotion in me. But he had black hair, and he almost looked like an Arabic sort of appearance and was wearing a brown uniform that I'm with and silver boots and a silver belt, and he was walking toward me and he had a smile and he was extending his hand out to me. And I was in my car looking out the windshield as he came my way, and in my mind, just like that little girl said, I don't think I belong here. Will you take me with you? And he just stopped. The saddest look you could ever imagine. And he just turned away, didn't say anything, and he walked away and walked into the opening, and it just floated away and left me there. And I looked down, and my dog was sleeping in my lap, and just comfortable as could be. So there obviously was nothing to fear. And then I think I told you on the 21st of June here at the house, I saw an NL go over real early in the morning, and I was just watching it out the window of the bedroom. And it stopped and flared up for me. And then I just had that sense of sadness.
Wow.
Tears in my eyes. I'm 66 years old for crying out loud. You know, boy, I don't need to be feeling that way about anything. But it was just like, and I didn't know if it was that I was being left behind or just if our world is in such a mess that it was getting the emotional feelings of the people on board the craft, that they just were in so much sorrow over the condition of our world, you know, and I've thought about that, and I haven't been able to sort those two things out yet.
Wow. Wow.
So anyway.
It's very interesting. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories that are very similar to yours. My sister-in-law, she's actually part Native American as well, and I don't know if, like I mentioned on the little promo there, being Native American means you're more likely to have UFO encounters or means you're more likely to have a benevolent encounter or not.
I truly believe that. And I think it's because of a continuity of many generations of contact and positive contact. You know, you'd never hear of a Native American getting in a jet plane and trying to shoot down a UFO or any, there isn't any hostility there. And I think we both know that communication, you know, is in your heart and in your mind. And if you have, you know, you have evil thoughts and are trying to destroy something, you know, they're going to stay away from you. But if you welcome them and you know them in your culture and in your genetic makeup, and there's already the bonds have been established. And so I really believe that that's one of the reasons why, and also the Native Americans seem to just be on the lookout for that sort of thing and open to those sort of events as well.
Right.
My opinion.
My sister-in-law, she's embraced the Native American culture and her heritage in some ways, many ways, I would say. Anyway, she had a series of encounters as a child with these blue-skinned beings that would come into her bedroom and basically take her memories, not in a way that they're stealing them, but just sort of record them, I guess, of what's going on and what she felt and all this stuff. And so it occurred for like 2 weeks, and then afterwards they went away. And both she and her little sister, for the next few nights, went out to the end of the driveway and looked up at the sky and were crying, and say, take us back, you know, we don't want to be here, we don't belong here. That same thing. And which you said in this other lady that I interviewed. So the people, I think, do have this, I think there's, that the Native Americans are, in fact, genetically linked, I think, to some of these ETs.
I believe that. And my little brother, who is a medicine man, when we would be outside at night, he always would look up at this particular star, and I don't even know which one it is. It wasn't the North Star, but it was in that general area. And he would say, "That's our home." You know, he'd say, "That's our home." I said, "What are you talking about?" And he always could pick that star out, and he'd always look up that and say, "That's our home." And he's come a long, long way. In fact, I think I directed you to his website, and he talks about his abductions and the prophecies that was given. And I don't know if your listeners would be interested in accessing the website, but it's amazing, and it lists many, many things that have proved to come true. And I don't know.
No, yeah, they definitely be interested in.
I did talk to him about the telepathic communication of the night that he was abducted. Could I share that with your listeners?
Oh, please. That would be awesome.
And so he said, so I went to bed hoping to dismiss my feelings as simply symptoms of overwork, because for weeks he'd had these same dreams. After a while, the dream started again. First, the eagles came in from the four sacred directions, that's north, south, east, and west. Then they turned into round silver disks. As the humming and vibration became more intense, I heard a strong voice say to me, "Get ready, my son, it is time to go." "Who are you?" I mentally responded in defiance. "Why do you torment me so much?" Suddenly I found myself standing next to my bed, and I felt compelled to walk into the front room. Some unknown force was pulling me against my will, and someone or something was telepathically trying to communicate with me. But who or what? Again I heard a voice say, "You are one of us. You have much to learn. Come forward, my son. It is time to go." Outside the large window hovered a huge silver disc-shaped vehicle, approximately 45 feet in diameter. This thing was pulling me closer and closer, and I couldn't seem to get away. I also felt a burning sensation on my skin. So that's how he talks about the telepathic drawing, and then, of course, he continues about his experience on the craft and the prophecies, but he has those in his website, and it's a pretty amazing reading, and it reinforces the... In fact, what I didn't tell you, because it sounds so bizarre, is that when he was on the craft, he told me that the creatures there were Native American people, and he described all four of them very, very clearly. And I've never heard anybody else ever say anything about Indians riding around a flying saucer.
Well, isn't that... I'm going to have to check that out. Because
I agree. Me too.
Because I think, like I said, I think there is some sort of link there. There's another case which always comes to my mind, Jonathan Hunter Gray.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of him then?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he had a, I guess you would call it an abduction experience in uh-huh. Richland Center, Wisconsin, while driving with his son.
Uh-huh.
And in many respects, this was your typical abduction by gray-type ETs.
Yeah.
Which I said we weren't going to talk about, but
right, right.
But that's what it was. I mean, he was he was laid out, examined. You know, his clothes were removed. He was given injections in various places in his body. But what's amazing about his case is he was healed in so many different ways. He noticed more than 18 different areas of physiological improvements.
Holy moly!
Including improved skin tone, improved circulation. His eyesight improved. His cuts would heal much faster. He started having his hair grow faster, and his fingers and toenails. His wrinkles disappeared.
Oh, and crying out loud.
He lost weight. He quit smoking. He had no desire to smoke.
Uh-huh.
And it just goes on. And his son also noticed some improvements as well, though not as dramatic, perhaps because he's much
amazing,
younger.
Isn't it? That's absolutely amazing. My sister-in-law has been abducted a number of times, and she's talked about being healed. And she had a cancer in her large intestine, and she said that after the abduction that she went in for testing, it was all gone. And so there's an amazing potential there for us if we can just open our hearts and minds to that.
Right, right. Well, I got a whole book, UFO Healings, which lists about 100 cases.
Is that amazing?
So this, you know, that was actually published in 1996, and I'm estimating there's got to be at least double that on record right now, and of course many, many more, which people don't talk about.
How can anybody discount that? You know,
this is some of the evidence we have, really.
Preponderance of evidence. We used to call that the preponderance of evidence. You know, why? How can anybody turn their back on that? You know, there's just. I don't know what the answer will be to finally bring the human species into line with the rest of the universe, but there's sure a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of entities trying to do that for us and with us.
Right. Well, you know, there's another thing that I find fascinating, which kind of parallels Native American culture and the UFO phenomena is that a lot of people who are taken on board these craft are warned by the ETs of upcoming environmental problems and disasters.
Yes.
And a lot of the Native American elders have been saying this for years and years and years.
Yeah, on my brother's website. Did you get a chance to look at that particular part of his website where he talked about the prophecies that he was given?
I did. I read it all, and it was...
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
It was gripping. I mean, he's predicting Mount Shasta.
Yeah, yeah.
And so many other things.
He was right on Mount St. Helens, and just right on down the line.
Mount St. Helens, I mean.
Yeah. In Gordon Michael Scallion, I'm sure you've heard of him. I thought it was interesting that... even though he's from a different venue, that my little brother hooked in with him. And on his my little brother's website, he shows Scallion's map of the North America of the future after the cataclysmic events that are scheduled to happen at some point, probably in our lives.
Right, right. You know, some of these predictions are chilling, like the moon will turn completely red with blood.
Uh-huh.
That reminds me of a prophecy given by Tom Brown Jr., who was taught by Stalking Wolf. He's an Apache scout.
Uh-huh.
And Tom Brown Jr. started the largest wilderness school in America, and the knowledge he learned from this guy. And he got the whole Native American culture experience. And he had these series of prophecies, and one involved that same exact thing. And if that's a sign of... you know, upcoming major earth changes, I guess, would be the best way of putting it. So, but some of these things are really amazing that your brother said. I mean, rare and extinct animals and birds and fish
uh-huh.
begin to appear.
Uh-huh.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, if your listeners want to go at that firsthand, you know, that's at his website is www.nativehealer, just one word, NATIVE. HEALER and then .net, and then that takes you into his homepage, and then go into news, I think is in the next platform, and then there's another one that says UFO contacts and prophecies, and he lays those out very specifically. And Bobby, that's my brother, he paid the price for that. He lost his job. He was a professor at Humboldt State University in Northern California. He lost his job. He lost a lot of his friends and his coworkers, and you know, he paid a price for that. But he was charged to communicate to the people. And you think about the prophets over the years, and a lot of them didn't have a very easy life.
Right.
But they seemed willing to pay the price to present the information that they were given, that they were told to share. And he's had a tough life. Because of that, and it's kind of followed him around. And,
right, and I know that's not unusual. People who are pioneers of new thoughts and new ideas often, you know, have the difficult path ahead of them. And that's particularly true with UFOs. I know of at least 10 cases where people who had a UFO experience and as a result, somehow or another, of getting involved with this phenomenon were fired from their job.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, like, a typical example is John Mack, who was a Harvard professor who won the, I believe it was the Nobel Prize of Literature.
Uh-huh.
That's the Pulitzer Prize, I mean.
He's dead now, isn't he?
Yeah, he died.
Yeah, I'd heard that under questionable circumstances. So I'm wondering, you know, if this is supposed to be, well, then you get into the paranoia of this whole issue, that, you know, if the government is covering things up. And they don't want people talking about it, you know. They've had the power to shut you up and make you disappear.
Right. Well, there's no doubt in my mind that they are covering up, and that in many cases they have gone the whole way to, you know, causing harm to people. It's my understanding that when a UFO crashes, I mean, they surround the area and exterminate anyone in it. So
that's
a very, very serious situation. People who find themselves with hard evidence of UFOs often are visited by government people. And the Roswell case is a typical example.
Yes.
So,
you know, I think I told you about my friend reservation down here that we were talking, and he mentioned that he and a friend were in a car one night, and they were being actually chased by a UFO and this scared him so much that he pulled under a bridge and stopped his car and just stayed under there. And he said eventually it just went away and left him alone, and he was so frightened that he actually wet himself. And he says he just never talks about that. And I just happened to mention that I was going up on Thunder Mountain on a couple nights to look for nocturnal lights. And then that just brought this story out. And I just thought, how many people have amazing stories to tell but are afraid or unwilling to do so, you know? And so now we can talk about those things, but, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, even most of the people that I talk to, I always ask them, did you call the police or anyone? And almost everyone says no. Most people don't report their encounter to anyone but even friends and family. That's about as far as it usually goes. So I think there's a lot of people having these UFO experiences. I really do. Now, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight is Stan Hughes. We're talking about Native American UFO encounters and benevolent and telepathic UFO encounters and just all sorts of interesting stuff in general. Now, Stan, there's this one case you told me about where there was a family member who went to a healing ritual and a UFO appeared.
It was actually my son, and if I may, I'd like to tell a little bit more about that story.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, that's an amazing and very touching story.
It just happened to be the summer solstice, and my son, his senior year in high school, he was a foreign exchange student in Norway. And when he came back, there was something different about him. And he was having bad dreams, and he was nervous, and there just wasn't the same boy that we sent to Norway. And when he got to college at the University of Oregon, he actually tried to do himself in one day. And so I went down and got him and brought him home, and we got him into therapy and got him back pointed in the right direction. And my little brother was deeply concerned about him and asked if he could do some doctoring with him. And holistic works for me, and I'm willing to try just about anything. And so we agreed to do that. So the night of the summer solstice, we took him and myself and my little brother and his wife and their three kids, and we went way up in the mountains in northeastern state of Washington. There's a little lake way back up in there called Sullivan Lake. And so we set a camp out, and they were going to doctor him that night. And so Tila is my little sister-in-law. So she and Bobby started working on him in a native sort of way. And Tila was taking water and putting it on his hair and patting it down. And she did this over and over again. And she said, there's flames coming out of his head. And so she calls him Edepa, which means firehead, even though he doesn't have red hair. And Bobby was doctoring him and working on him, and all of a sudden Bobby said, who's John Carl? John Carl. And Ted looked up and said, well, when the family that took him in had a son named John Carl, and he died just before Ted got to Norway. And so Ted stayed in his bedroom that year he was there. And Bobby said, well, he's tormenting you, and he's lonely, and he wants you to come to the other side with him. And so Bobby started doctoring and talking to this John Carl, and said, you know, the Creator's law is that you don't stay here. You're supposed to go to the other side, and there's people waiting for you, and, you know, and finally Ted just kind of tipped over, and this is all happening in the middle of the night by a big campfire, and apparently John Carl's spirit left Ted, and as he went by the the kids were sleeping in the back of the camper, and all of a sudden they started screaming, and, "Daddy, Daddy, there's a ghost." And Bobby said, "Well, that's just Teddy's friend, John Carl. He's going to the other side. Don't worry about it."
Wow.
Well, Ted just, even his eyes seemed to change, and his whole body just seemed to relax. And then we heard this humming sound, and we looked up, and right above the trees was a massive UFO sitting there, and it was so low that the trees were wobbling. And Bobby said, "Well, they're just here to celebrate this wonderful event." And so,
wow,
you know, it was such a happy thing. And the conclusion of the ceremony was that Ted had to go jump in this icy cold lake. And so he went down, and Bobby said, "Come on, you got to do this, you got to do this." And Ted kind of waded into the water, you know, up to his ankles. Oh, it must have been icy cold. And finally, Bobby said, "Do it." And so my son just jumped into the lake with this big splash. And when he came up out, you should have heard the hoop. It was the most, it just raised your spirits, and it just echoed off the mountains around that lake as far as you could hear and see. It was such a beautiful thing. And then the UFO just kind of went away, and that was that magnificent night where I got my son back.
I totally can relate to that story. I was driving along the freeway once, I think I told you this, back from San Diego, and my sister-in-law, my other sister-in-law actually, was pregnant at the time, and she was due to have her baby pretty soon. I didn't know the exact date, but suddenly, you know, as I'm driving, there was an overcast sky.
Uh-huh.
And I looked up, and there was this giant globe of light. And this is right above the freeway, mind you, and no one seemed to notice it.
Oh, for crying out loud.
But it was large, you know, and maybe 100, 200 feet up, not high up. And I drove up, you know, and you can't stop on the freeway, of course. I mean, I could have, but I didn't. And I just kept on driving, and I looked at it up over the windshield, and it disappeared. But when I saw it, I knew exactly what it meant, and what it was saying, that my niece had just been born. This was on July 9th. I'll never forget it.
I'll be darned. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it was just amazing. It was a strong message that just came to me. And I rushed home, and of course, and sure enough, and another experience, my sister, she had just had her baby, and her the father of this baby was actually, I think he's half Native American.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as this child was born, my sister had a UFO visitation 3 days in a row. And she said it had, she really felt that it was there to look at the baby,
all
I guess.
The time.
So I'm
joining in the celebration. It's one of the family.
Exactly. So they're keeping an eye on us, whatever, you know, they're doing up
must
there.
Must be okay, or they would have done this in a long time ago. Do you remember when I told you about the experience that my middle daughter had with the colored lights coming in? Because that seemed kind of unusual, and I really liked your response to that. Could I share that?
Oh, yeah. That was, okay. Yeah, please.
Okay, so now she sent me a letter telling me about this, and she said, "Did I tell you I saw a UFO? At least I'm pretty sure I did. A couple weeks ago, I rode with Cindy over to Central Washington University to drop one of her friends off. We were driving back home, which would be back to Seattle, and it was late and a crystal clear night. It must have been around 2 a.m. or so. We were in the middle of nowhere, and I was kicking back, looking at the stars through Cindy's sunroof, when suddenly three stars came together in a triangle shape and started rotating clockwise and switching colors from green to blue to red, all of them alternating these three colors. I almost shouted out for Cindy to look, but by the time I overcame my shock and gathered my thoughts, they all took off in different directions. She said, I haven't shared this experience with anyone but you, and I don't plan on telling anyone either." And your response, it just made me laugh. And this is what you wrote back to me. "There were a few experiences she described, which I did have some question about. And like many people who have had UFO experiences, she has more questions than answers." Oh, let's see. I think it's pretty clear that they're also showing off to witnesses, at least in some cases. It sure seems like that with your daughter's sighting, too, like they were putting on a little display for her to say, hello, how are you? We're here, especially because of the way the lights change color. I just thought that was such a neat response to her concerns, which I have shared with her, by the way.
Oh, good. Yeah, I truly believe that because, you know, I've been studying this, of course, for a long, long time, and I think that they are trying to reach out to people. There's another case. You know, you described your really amazing encounter with this beautiful gentleman who lands on the road in front of you, comes out of the saucer, and then looks at you, and then gets back in. It seems so, I mean, it's just so profound, and yet so short and strange, you know? And I found another case of that took place in Arizona, in Sedona, where a gentleman was driving along the highway, and a UFO landed next to him on the road, and he stopped his car, and out walked this absolutely beautiful male with shoulder-length hair. I believe it was blonde, and he had tannish skin, darker kind of skin, and was wearing a blue jumpsuit, I believe, and was just very, very handsome, and walked straight up to this guy, and they shook hands, didn't say a word, and then this guy turned around and walked back into the flying saucer, leaving this other guy, of course, kind of devastated. And there's a number of cases like that UFOs will just land and people will come out just to say hi, and you know, and just to acknowledge, I guess, a relationship that they can't share any farther than, you know, only so far, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I would call that a blessing, and I felt blessed by my experience, and I still do. And here's a little chuckle. My granddaughter, we were visiting a couple days ago, and I hadn't talked to her about that. And so finally, you know, I want her to open up her mind and thoughts to these issues, and I told her the story. And she just shook her head, and she says, Papa, you must have been dreaming. Well, maybe I was. I don't think so, though. It was pretty vivid. And you know, I've had a few visions, and I've had a lot of dreams, and I know the difference. And when you have a vision, it stays with you.
Right. No, I think it was a real experience. I mean, it matches up with so many others.
I think I told you that I made a little trip down to Rachel, Nevada in January. Did I mention that to you?
I think you did mention that.
Yeah, along the extraterrestrial highway. I always wanted to do that. And I took off all by myself. And there's something to be said for that, because you don't have somebody saying, I have to go to the bathroom, let's stop here, let's stop. You
know? Right.
If you're traveling by yourself, you can go as far as you want to, stop whenever you want to, eat whenever you want to. But I always wanted to go down the extraterrestrial highway and stop at Rachel. And I had such... I would really recommend that to anybody that has opportunity. You know, it's the middle of nowhere, or even the bottom of nowhere, but it's just a fun place. And if we are among believers, you know, you really get a kick out of that. And there's always interesting people in that little restaurant there, besides the owner and the cook, and they're just really having a good time. And I think I told you that the east end of the road, Alamo, and then it catches one of the U.S. highways north. And that night is when I ran into the nocturnal light that flashed at me. That was so bright it looked like a headlight.
Wow.
And I pulled over, stopped, and then there wasn't anything, and I waited and waited and waited. And so after about an hour, I got on my way, and then I saw it later on far to the north. So it must have just been passing over, like you say, hi, how are you? Catch you later, and then... It flashed, but it looked just like a headlight. That's how big it was and how bright it was. It just flashed one time. And, of course, as soon as I saw it, I pulled over. I thought, now, this is going to be fun. That must have been on a mission or something. I can strongly recommend that trip if people can do it. And it's just fun. And, of course, I got real close to Area 51. And I got a good photo of the sign that says, if you take one more step, we'll kill you.
Really?
That's the paraphrase.
right. Deadly force authorized.
And I was looking for meteorites, too. And there are places through there where they are found, and I drove out onto the desert and walked around. And let me tell you something that really opened my eyes. This was in January, so you know, it was pretty cold, but it was perfectly still. It was daytime. It was cold, but it wasn't windy, so it didn't feel so cold. And I was walking around out in the desert, and there is so much life there. All the holes in the ground and the droppings, and you know, I always kind of thought of the desert as just kind of a lifeless, almost like the surface of the moon, you know. But once you can get out in there and it's quiet and peaceful, and you look around, it's a habitat that's alive with creatures and so on, and that really impressed me, because I thought, you know, these people that take their all-terrain vehicles and drive all over the desert and up and down sand dunes and stuff and have such a great time. And I always thought, well, they're not hurting anything.
Right. You know, I've been to Area 51 as well, to the little alien with Pat Travis.
Right, that's exactly right. Yeah.
And driving up, you know, you go, it's just north of Las Vegas, and there's this little road you take.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, I have 3/4 of a tank of gas. That's enough. It was just barely enough, let me tell you.
I hear you. That's one thing. There's a lot of wide-open spaces there. So.
And, yeah, the valleys were huge. I didn't see any UFOs, but, wow, it is a beautiful place and really a fun thing. And it would take you, I would estimate, at least 3 or 4 days to drive around Area 51.
I totally agree with you. And
it's as big as a state.
Always on the alert and watching for those interesting things. And, of course, now the government is saying, well, a lot of that was our own vehicles, and, you know, the B-1 and all stuff like that, that it's not UFOs. It's our secret projects that people are seeing, you know, and that's probably part of it.
Right. Well, I think we've captured some of the flying saucers and are reverse engineering it to a certain extent.
Well, we hope so. If they found such a great power source like that, you'd hope they'd be trying to replicate it.
Well, I think that's where some of our medical technology has come from, and some of the computers and all of this. And I'm not alone in saying that. I mean,
isn't that amazing?
It really is. I mean, this
now,
is
so what are we contributing? You know, what do we have to contribute? If it's a two-way sort of thing, I don't know. Do aliens have emotions? You know, can they show love? You know. Those are just questions that I wonder about. I know that one that I saw showed great sorrow as I saw it in the expression on his face. And
now, would you have gone aboard if he had said okay?
Would I? Still, to get a ticket. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think I probably would as well.
Yeah. And I don't know if I told you about my friend that lives in the Black Hills of South Dakota, and the night that when we were going to college, he worked the night shift, and the Homestake was a big mine there in those days, and they had a big logging business, and so he would go out at night with another guy, and they would service the logging equipment in the nighttime up in the mountains, and then in the morning, the other workers would come, and they'd be loaded with diesel, and they'd be lubricated, and they'd work all day, and then he and this other guy would, I think they call it the honey wagon or something, and they'd go up and service. So one night, you're in Yankara, which is a mountain in the Black Hills, just to the west a little bit, like on the Wyoming-South Dakota border. They were up there and servicing some vehicles, and now I've never heard this before. He said he heard this like a ping sound, and it echoed, and it was a ways off. And of course, they both stopped what they were doing and kind of wondered what was going on. And then he heard it again, and it was kind of toward the right, and it echoed on the rocky cliffs up in that area there. And it was this pinging sound, and it just, and again, he heard it a little bit later, this pinging sound again.
Like a beep or something?
Yeah, well, it wasn't a beep. He called it a ping.
Okay.
And it frightened him and his friend so much that they just got in their truck and they took off as fast as they could down this little gravel road. They didn't even finish their job. And they were going so fast that they went into the ditch and tipped over, and he ended up breaking his back in the accident. And he didn't even realize he'd broken his back at the time because he was so worried about getting his friend out of that truck and so on. And we have talked about that many times since then. In fact, we're going to go back up there this summer ourselves and go to the very same place. And he's got a couple of theories that almost are logical. And since I've never ever heard anything like this before, you know, the sky's the limit, and maybe a listener can say, oh, I've experienced that too. But he had a couple of thoughts. He said they may have been, now this really sounds bizarre, herding Bigfoot out into an open area where they could pick it up. And so the pinging was directing, making the Bigfoot run in this particular direction until they could get into the open where they could pick it up. So he thought about that. Okay, that was interesting.
That is interesting.
And also, later on, he thought they may have also been checking for minerals, and that the pinging sound would bring the sound reflecting would let them know what kind of minerals were in the cliff sides and the rocks and around there, that if it came back and, you know, like they look for oil, you know, with those stomper things that they have now, or they take these trucks and they put these press things on the ground and they send sound waves down into the ground to see if they can find pools of oil. That he thought that maybe it was something like that, and they were looking for some kind of mineral of some kind.
Well, they couldn't be taking any kind of readings, you know, just recording the area and the terrain.
We have often sat around and talked about that particular experience and tried to figure out what happened. But since I'd never heard anybody ever say that before, I thought I'd run that by your listeners. And
well, there is a Bigfoot UFO connection. I would say it happens in about 1% or less of the cases. Probably less, considerably. But there is definitely a connection, and I know of many cases, probably 10 or 20 at least, where there is a connection with UFO and Bigfoot.
And I totally believe that, and if they are studying the species on our planet, and, you know, doing their scientific studies, and you know, you talk about the where they cut the cows open and stuff like that, you know, it doesn't seem any less likely that they would be tracking down one of those characters.
Right. You know, it's funny, I'm doing a lot of research on Bigfoot right now because I'm writing a children's book about it, so I'm amazed at how much evidence there is and how many cases there are. But you told me a really interesting case involving a dog.
Well, yeah. I have a friend. His name is Rainbow Cougar. And he's a young Indian man. He's about 6'4", and just the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. He's real gentle, and he likes to go around to powwows, and he's a storyteller. And he told me, this is so bizarre, his aunt lives in a trailer up in the Colville Indian Reservation, which is the north central part of the state of Washington, and it's pretty wild country up in there. And early one morning, she heard her dog yelping and yapping and just this terrifying sound, and she thought maybe a cougar had come out of the mountains and was getting him. And so she got her gun and peeked out the window, and this Bigfoot was rolling the dog along the roof of her trailer, just playing with it for the fun of it. I'd never heard of anything like that before. And, of course, she was totally shocked. And then I guess she yelled or something, and then he took off up into the trees. But I can't imagine what happened to that poor dog. He probably died of a heart attack. But did you ever hear such a crazy story in your life?
Yeah, you know, I actually looked into it. And it turns out there are a number of cases where Bigfoot grabs dogs and throws them around.
I'll be darned. So anyway, when I heard that story, I really laughed. And my nephew saw a young Bigfoot up in the Trinity Alps and up there in Northern California. And he talks about it every now and then. It just crossed his path, and he said it was just about his size, so it was young. I never heard anything about a young Bigfoot before.
Well,
and it just looked at him. He said, and it screamed at me and gave me this really mean look and then went down into the trees. Of course, it scared him to death. So he knows that's true, and you can't tell him that he didn't see that.
Well, how interesting. There's just so much going on in this world.
Oh, my gosh. I thought it was interesting when my little brother got in so much trouble at the college. And he was tenured at the time, and so it was kind of hard for them to do much about it. And so he had to go before some kind of a council or a tribunal or something. And the dean of his department, my brother was in Native American Studies, said, you know, if you can prove to me about this abduction thing, you know, then you'll have an advocate. So my little brother said he took him way up in the mountains, and that night they got buzzed by a UFO.
And oh, wow.
It scared the dean so much that he started running. And, you know, he ran blindly down the path, and he fell and broke his ankle, and so my little brother had to carry him off the mountain on his back.
Oh, my gosh.
And so by the time it came together, he used the college as the forum to present his prophecies. And, boy, they did not like that at all. And so he agreed, and they agreed that they'd come to some kind of an agreement for a severance if he would not use the college as a forum for that anymore. So then he was cut loose and went about his... And we worked together. I was so happy we were working together for the Indian Education Technical Assistance Center up here. And we'd go to Alaska, and we'd go to Alabama, and we'd go all over the Northwest and Omaha and down in the near area. And wherever we went, sooner or later, some Native people would talk about some experience with UFOs. And they always were benevolent, and there was never any fear or anything like that. And that really helped me develop where I stand now, too, is to hear other people saying, you know, if we had to worry about this, they could have taken us out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, whatever they're doing, if they're observing us or somehow helping us behind the scenes, you know, don't worry about it.
Right.
That's pretty comforting.
Well, it is very comforting. I think there's, you just don't hear about it because, you know, TV and the media is always wants fear, and, you know, these sort of stories, they don't want to hear about friendly aliens.
Yeah, it's more exciting if they're terrible.
Well, you know what, Stan, we're actually at the end of our show.
Oh, my gosh, I'm just getting warmed up here.
But we do have, like, 1 or 2 minutes if you want to give our audience, listeners, a closing message.
A greeting, Hakota, my friends, and that we are the Wichata Oyata, the believer people, and we are a family, and whether we're together physically or mentally or emotionally or spiritually, you know, we are holding each other's hands, and that's a nice feeling, and I don't want anybody out there thinking they're all alone in this and that they're dealing with the ramifications of what they've experienced, that they feel that, you know, it's their story, they'll never be able to tell it, and they have to carry that some sort of way, because it's a big family, and it's getting bigger every single day, and you are in the family, and I'm glad to welcome you.
Well, thank you, Stan. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's been great. I'll have to have you on again sometime. Wow, I mean,
we haven't even talked about how to identify nocturnal lights and the daylight discs that I've seen and the RVs and the encounters. It's just all stuff. And things keep happening. I'm getting up to Thunder Mountain on a regular basis, and I think I told you I've noticed that some of the UFOs now are pulsating more than they used to. And I don't know, there's things
something's
that are
up.
Happening all the time.
Yeah, something's up.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's something good.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about it.
Preston, such a pleasure to visit with you. And let's keep in touch. And as things occur, I'll let you know. And we'll just maintain a nice, close relationship because we share a common bond here.
Yeah. All right. Sounds great.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, everyone, that's our show tonight. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight has been Stan Hughes. We've been talking about benevolent Native American encounters. Very, very interesting. I hope you can join us next week when our guest is Marguerite Manning, and we're going to be talking about her book, Cosmic Karma. Sounds pretty interesting. I hope you can join us. Until then, keep your eyes in the skies and have a great evening.